Hello and welcome to Fantasy Life Podcast. I'm your host, Ian Hart. It's a great day to be great. And we are officially 1 week away from the 2024 NFL Draft. So cram in those mocks. Make sure you watch Draft Day. Again, we have finally the big event right around the corner. And what better way to get ready for it than to talk about some draft-related content with my two favorite people, Dwayne The Rock McFarlane and Chris Allen, who we are still trying to get a great nickname. Chris, the Cincy Storm Chaser was cool, but it doesn't really roll off the tongue. Let's call a spade a spade.
Well, no, but now it's in the summertime where there's not a lot of there have been some storms actually, like in the Ohio area. So I guess that would kind of fit. But yeah, I'm kind of with you. It doesn't really roll off the tongue. And like, especially during the off season where weather, nobody cares about the weather at this point. So it's like, I don't know. We'll find something else. We'll workshop something else.
Community suggestions would definitely be appreciated here, but I will also, try to watch the film and get better. Dwayne, you lucky Texan, you. How's it going?
Yeah, man, it's already warm enough that when I go outside for any sort of activity, I sweat. So that's Texas. So I'm not going to complain though. It's that time of year where it is. You can stand it. It's not July or August. By that time it gets here, see, I'll wish that I lived where you guys live. But for now, yeah, I'll take it. And nothing like, some old man sweat. That's good stuff, Harditz.
God, man, I'm such a freaking mess with sweat. I don't know what's wrong with my body, but I just, dude, if I don't wear black shorts now to the gym, it's just horrendous, man. I'm just sprinting to the locker.
Dude,
it looks like I pissed.
I was on my run the 2 days ago. And I guess I looked really gross because some dude pulled over and he's like, man, are you okay? Do you need a ride? And I said, no, man, I look like crap and I'm out of shape. So, but thank you. I really appreciate it. He goes, I saw a Jeep broken down back there. And I thought for sure that was you, And I was like, oh God.
Damn, man.
Dwayne working hard. We're working hard. The whole Fantasy Life crew continues to work hard. So make sure you guys check out Dwayne and Marcus's awesome interview with Matt Waldman. I also had the privilege of sitting down with Eric Froton and just, again, really gotten some good, strong running back analysis there. So, yeah, continuing to grind on through. But today, want to, again, take a bit of a broader, look at the draft as a whole, go over some of our favorite things about draft season, least favorite things, and maybe even get some hot takes across. So let's start off with the latter sentiment with our first question. What prospect take has you guys feeling like the Disney meme dude with all the knives at his neck? After I proposed this question to our podcast group chat, I was actually informed the name is Flynn Rider from Tangled.
I know this. I've got a daughter.
You have a daughter.
Kids. That's fair. Hardest, that's why.
Okay. So I'm just making sure I'm not.
You're okay. You get a pass. I wouldn't have known that either if I didn't have, kids.
Yeah. Okay. I'm happy. I thought you guys were going to be coming at me there. We're on the same page. This is a good start. Chris, who has you feeling like Flynn Rider from Tangled?
Audric Estime. I think he's probably the guy that, when I look at just his athletic profile, how he could potentially be used in the NFL, and then where he falls in the ranks, I could see, right now, I believe on Underdog, he's the rookie RB, 8 or 9, somewhere in there, RB, mid-50s in total, overall. I could see him being at least from this class in his first year, depending on where he lands and all that, he could wind up being in the RB3, RB4 range. And I'm just thinking about it from a landing spot and just general talent potential. So let's set the stage real quick. Last season, 4 out of the top 12 running backs had target shares under 10%. The general grinders, the Gus Edwards, even Derrick Henry, those types of guys, that did not have at least the requisite target share in PPR leagues that we would typically say you have to be able to get targets. Now, of course, if you earn targets at a higher rate, that's more conducive to being in the top 12 on a year-over-year basis. But last year we saw almost at least a third of those running backs that scored in the top 12 in terms of total PPR points didn't have that. So at least that sets up well for Estime. Didn't have a high target share when he was in college. So that's one point for him. Two, in terms of at least the athletic profile and the athletic measurables and metrics that he was able to produce while in college, above average in this class in terms of missed tackles forced, also short yardage work was also well above the average for this class. I mean, all the points towards him being the guy that, should he fall into the squad that, or an offense that would allow him to work in that short yardage goal line type back, he could fit in well there. He can also produce as well. Also being like the early down option. I mean, in most of the areas that are, again, for running backs, conducive to being a, like a high-end like fantasy score, at least above average fantasy score. Third point for Estime, in terms of the private workouts and the teams that have brought him in so far, if you go to what's, I can never pronounce his last name correctly, but Kent Weyrausch, data analyst, yeah. Data Viz creator. He's actually been tracking some of the private visits that a lot of the prospects have been going through. Two teams stick out for Ajik Estime, the Bills and the Giants, who have brought him in for private workouts. Bills, notably, just have James Cook right here as of right now as being their starting running back. Latavius Murray no longer there. And of course, the Giants, they've moved on from Saquon Barkley. So at least like with that in mind, of the teams that at least shown interest in Estime, we can see like a direct path to him being like that early down grinder, the short yardage like type of back. So it moves him in that direction. So while as right now, us and like both the dynasty, even just redraft right now, we value him as being like closer to the back end of this class because he doesn't have like the receptions, the targets, the things that would make us say, aha, like that's going to be the guy that we would want to draft like immediately. But if he were to fall into one of those spots, falls into the Bills, falls to the Giants, maybe less or so for the Giants, it's not as much of a direct connect, but the Bills for sure, since they do have that need, then he could be that guy, I think, at least in my mind, that can vault up into at least the top end of this class. And so he's the guy I'm just kind of like, yeah, I could see it for him where it's like, I'm not as sure about some of those other guys, but for Estime, I can see him being like the like RB3, 4, like after everything's all said and done in 24.
Also a 10 out of 10 in terms of his ability to hurdle other human beings with the football in his hands, which I always appreciate out there. Dwayne, looking at your RB supermodel, he really is only coming in as the RB7 in the model score, but you see other areas propped up, third best cumulative, you know, score in the PFF grades index. And really it does seem like that if we can get past that, again, brutal 4.71 40-yard dash, maybe there is something there because the game speed really does seem to be on a different level. You can look at the 80-yard run against NC State, had another long run against Central Michigan, which Real Analytics clocked, you know, at north of 21 miles per hour. Actually, it looks like, again, per Real Analytics, which is not perfect, but it is consistent based off, you know, everyone they're measuring, the top five GPS averages measured for Isaac Garendo, everyone's favorite size speed freak, 4.33 40, and Ajik Estime, only 0.1 miles per hour apart. So Dwayne, is Ajik someone that you think, again, in the right spot, like Chris is talking about, could actually surprise? Because yeah, he might profile as a bit of an early down grinder, but hey, 15 to 20 carries in the Cowboys offense or something like that, I can get behind for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think landing spot's going to matter a lot. There's a big group of guys that are all like what Chris is talking about. And the key is, like, when you fall into the same tier in the way the supermodel grades you, like, one of your big takeaways from using it shouldn't be so much, oh my God, this guy's like two percentile points ahead of this other guy. It should be they're all grouped really close together, and I can get these two players going a round or two or three rounds later, right, and on Underdog right now. Or I can get them 10 picks later in a dynasty, you know, draft or in a rookie draft. That's really the whole point, you know, of the model, is to create these tiers and these bands. Some of these guys are going to hit, some of them are not. There's a lot of factors that are going to take effect, like once they get picked, their draft capital obviously would be one of those things, but depending on where you land. So I could see him, like Chris said, you know, outperforming a guy that grades ahead of him, you know, in the same tier, like a Trey Benson, you know, a Jalen Wright. Technically, I like those guys a little bit better, Blake Corum. But Ajik Estime is right there. You know, he's right there. He technically starts the next tier, which is tier three. But even if you go read my write-ups, I talk about how close the two tiers are and how the bands are. So it's like, if you wanted to get, you could actually argue with me that I shouldn't have even split the tier up, right? But there were enough reasons for me to do it. But if you notice, I talked to you about the hit rates. They're still really similar between tier three guys and tier two guys. It's going to come down to where they land. So yeah, like I could totally see if Estime gets the right landing spot, right, and a guy like Garendo gets a terrible one, like they end up way further apart, you know, in our post-rookie ranks.
I'm going to go ahead and steal the next hot take because it goes kind of right into that tier like you're talking about, Dwayne. And my Disney meme knives at my freaking throat hot take is that Will Shipley emerges as the most fantasy-friendly running back in this entire class. So, yeah, it's probably more realistic to say top three, top four, but not today. I'm going out on a limb here. And if I'm wrong, you know, it's late April. Hopefully you guys forget about it by the time, you know, October or November is rolling around. But seriously, it does seem like Shipley has has the sort of profile that we want in these running backs. He is explosive. I mean, the RAS score, holy freaking shit, people. 9.58 out of 10, 81st among 1,904 qualified running backs from 1987 to present day. Didn't run in the combine, so you got to, you know, take his pro day numbers with a little bit of a grain of salt, but from the 40 to the agility to even the jumps, elite, elite, elite. For a guy who isn't exactly pint size, I mean, I know everyone says he doesn't have the strength, doesn't have the size. 5'11", 206 for a guy that isn't even 22 years old yet. Hey, man, if we eat a couple Big Macs before the combine like J.J. McCarthy, we get that up to 215, I think people will be feeling a hell of a lot better about it. So, again, we have the sort of athletic makeup of a former five-star who was the number two freaking Hard B recruit in the 2021 class coming out of Clemson. And, oh, yeah, he catches passes as well as pretty much anyone out there. Only Bucky Irving, Ray Davis, and Will Shipley managed to average at least 5 PPR points per game from purely receiving production over these past 2 years. And yeah, at this point, he does seem like that sort of guy who maybe is pigeonholed in as more of that third down role, you know, returning kicks and not exactly trusted with the every down ability. But Dwayne, it does seem like he has that potential. And my God, man, if we are going to bet on a later round running back making a leap and getting a bigger role, why shouldn't it be a highly touted, you know, five-star going to a marquee school like Clemson who can catch the football and has the explosive ability to create big plays? What am I missing?
You're missing nothing. Like for each one of the, you know, positions in the series, which we did running back, wide receiver, and tight end, like I have a biggest takeaway, and Will Shipley is it from running back. Like I'm 10 spots over consensus in my ranks right now on Will Shipley versus where the industry is from a rookie standpoint. I'm multiple rounds ahead. If you're thinking about underdog, he is the guy that I want to take the shot on, and I want to take a shot on him, overestimate a lot of these other guys that he's going in a similar range of, because if you do hit the nuts on this, meaning he lands in the perfect role where he gets to do everything, he can do it all. So he can become this great receiver. He can at least become a good receiver coming out of the backfield. He never quite lived up to expectations on that front. He never lived up to expectations, period, in college. Like, if you want to get technical about it, I mean, when you're the number two recruit, like you mentioned, Ian, in the class, and you're a five-star guy, according to 247.
24/7.
24/7. Yeah, whatever. What are we talking about? Hoppany. 24/7 recruiting player. And, you know, whenever, man, I look at their recruits there, they've got a composite score, right? Which is like where you're ultimately you're grading these guys like on at the, like the finest level you can, right? And he's a five star. Anyway, he was a very highly thought of recruit. So he came in a little bit under that, like as far as what his ultimate production was, but like he got on the field right away as a freshman playing at a really big program. And then he kind of plateaued, but we see that sometimes from these guys. It can be tough whenever you play at Clemson, when you play at Alabama, you play at some of these other schools where they're constantly recruiting a really good running back every single season. So the model takes that into an account and it gives Will Shipley a little bit of a break for that. But you mentioned how well he did from a standpoint, you know, of the combine, but also when you look at the film side of it, right? When you bake in what Lance Zierlein had over at NFL.com, you look at some of what Matt Waldman, like you mentioned, we had him on the show yesterday, what he had to say about it. And when you go look at really PFF grades, right? So what's happening on the field has been really good for Will Shipley. And it lines up, even if you want to use that pro day for his speed score, he'd be at the 66th percentile. And I don't mind doing it because the film backs it up. Right. It's one thing whenever you see these guys, you're like, wow, had no explosive runs, didn't do this, didn't do that, but he ran really fast. That's like a major red flag, in my opinion. But when you have a player that just didn't ever quite get into the full-time role maybe you hoped for, but still when he had his opportunities, he was really good with them. I don't want to say he was great, but he was really good with them. He's a well-rounded player. Yeah, I think that Will Shipley is like the guy right now I want to be drafting while I can at really cheap in pretty much every draft that I'm in at the running back position. Like I said, 10 spots over 80 or 10 spots ahead of rookie draft consensus right now for me on Shipley. Oh, and so like hit rates on these guys. So 28% of the time a guy has had the profile of Shipley in the running back supermodel, they've gone on to have a top 24 finish in their first 2 years. So we're not saying this is a slam dunk, people, but where he goes in drafts, to say you have a 28% chance and he has a 7% shot, like at a top 12 finish. Okay. So like there are like cases in here where he's the guy that you really want to have. So yeah, I love Will Shipley.
RB61 over underdog fantasy right now. He's sandwiched between Ezekiel Elliott and Alexander Mattison. Like, come on, what are we doing here, everyone? I feel like that should, again, be far, far higher. And you can say it for a lot of these running backs. He's next to, you know, Audric Estime, RB57, Ray Davis, RB58, and, you know, there's another rookie around there. Dylan Lobb, you know, the New Hampshire product, is down there at RB68 as well. So I think, again, it's a good moral of the story that if you are a sicko degenerate, one of us drafting right now, please take a long look at these running backs, because we know, okay, Dobbins with the Chargers now, so it's not maybe as enticing, but the Cowboys, the Chargers, the Giants, the Bills, like, these teams are going to take one of these running backs, and once that happens, we're going to see them skyrocket up those ranks. So good stuff, Dwayne. And now back to you. What is your hot take now that I got to steal, you know, your running back?
Yeah, you stole Will Shipley, but that's okay. That's okay. It's a good one. You came up with a good one, so I just have to give you credit. And anytime, like, we don't try to force consensus between our takes, but like when you see the same thing and you're going at it from a different process from me, like, to me, that's just another positive data point. So I like that you got there in your own way. And like that makes me even more excited about what the supermodel had to say. But I'm going to go wide receiver, and I'm just going to go Jermaine Burton. I get it. There's off the field problems. Jermaine Burton may be a complete dickhead. Like, I've seen the stuff. I'm not condoning what he did, but what I'm saying is, just looking at how he grades out in the model, honestly, he's like Adonai Mitchell, but you're getting him later, right? Adonai Mitchell is this guy that people love how athletic he is. You know, he's a guy that never truly grew into an awesome player, but he was really good for periods. Well, you really get the same thing for Jermaine Burton, but you get him later in your drafts. I honestly don't think Adonai Mitchell should be a first-round NFL draft pick based on his production after normalizing for everything. His quarterback play, the competition he had to play against, all that. He still graded out below where he really should have. Now, does that mean I think Adonai Mitchell can't be good? No, I do think that he can be good. I just think he looks more like a raw day two pick. So that's the only thing with him. Like, I think he has a good chance to still be a hit as well. When I say good, like, if he should be in tier two or tier three. Jermaine Burton right now, you can draft more like a tier four or tier five player. And he's just got a very similar score. He's got a very similar, you know, if you want to call it just analytical profile, right? By the numbers, it looks very similar to what we get. Like, he's a guy that, you know, he never truly exploded, but he got a little bit better every single year. He's a guy that played at a big program, started at Georgia, then goes over to Alabama, you know, and they used him in a specific way. But the guys that he comps the closest to that really had profiles that were similar to his were George Pickens and Nico Collins. Both guys that never just went truly nuts in college, but there were some things we really liked about them when they had their opportunities. That's really where Jermaine Burton fits. That's also where A.D. Mitchell fits, like, to be honest. Again, you just have one player that people are completely discounting in drafts, and you have another player that, including NFL execs, they're going completely nuts about and saying that they're a first-round pick. So that's why I like Burton, because he really grades out in a similar way to a guy like A.D. Mitchell, but you just get this big discount on him. And I just think there's a lot of upside. So he's a guy, along with Will Shipley, anytime I'm drafting right now and I have a chance to take rookies, I want to take this guy every time that I can. And it doesn't hurt. Matt Waldman liked him, so the film's good on him. And you had Matt Harmon today, yeah, releasing in Reception Perception, or yesterday, he released his charting on Jermaine Burton, which was also very positive. So just another film data point pointing to the same thing that the data has already been telling us. So I think that's another really good thing to mention on Burton.
It's actually interesting that you bring up Burton, Dwayne, because I'm writing up the rookie profile for him to go up on fantasylife.com here in the next like day or so. And like when I first started just looking at his like average depth of target, things like his lowest like single season ADOT was like 15, 16 yards or something like that. It was kind of ridiculous. And so you see the number, and then you just think, oh, he's just this boundary, like deep threat perimeter type of guy. I think he ran like a 4.45, like somewhere in that range. Yeah. So it's like you see the speed, you see the metric, you see the ADOT, and then you just put him in this bucket. But then it's like, okay, well, after he switched over to Alabama, like his slot rate like spiked up. It was like 35, almost like 40% like slot rate. So he has like some versatility as a route runner. Like to your point, talking about Harmon's reception perception, it showed that he had high end or at least above average success rates against both man and zone, like man press coverage and zone coverage. So it's like he has something more than just what the cursory stats were like suggest. And then like again, if you pull up even just like searching on social media for just like highlights of this guy, like you can see like he has like the home run ability, being able to create explosives downfield, but even on some of the shorter routes that he runs, the fluidity at the catch point, being able to switch his hips so that he can get to the outside, pick up extra yards. It's like not everything that you would think that not all of his skill set is captured just like specifically in the numbers. There's also like other points to his game that just highlights like how Alabama wanted to use him, which is great, like for being able to create yardage and create explosives and all that. But there's still like other skill sets that he shows that are on film that I think that are just parts of his
game. He actually did some things that A.D. Mitchell didn't, like in his data profile and with what the film people had to say. So like, if you look at his breakdown, like by target depth, which I think is also a good thing to look at, 40% of his targets came on intermediate routes, 10 to 19 yards down the field. So while he was getting these deep shots, he was 8 percentage points above the college average of 20% and he was at 28% of his targets came 20 plus yards down the field. He was also heavily attacking that intermediate area. And then if you look at what Waldman had to say about him, he graded him as a star caliber route runner. It's really hard to grade out in the star category for Matt. He's got really tight criteria. And this is what Matt said about him, quote, route technician who can play all three positions and a candidate for the designation of having a better NFL career than college career.
And I mean, he had a pretty damn good college career. Again, not everyone can put up 1,500 yards and 12 touchdowns per season. I don't think anyone's trying to say Burton or A.D. Mitchell, for that matter, deserves to be a top three wide receiver in this class. But to see both these guys start their career at Georgia and really work their way onto the field into big roles from day one, go on to another blue blood school for Burton, Alabama, you know, obviously for Mitchell, Texas, and then still put up relatively solid numbers. Good to see from both. And honestly, I think both like are apparently fallen because of quote unquote off the field issues. But man, like, it's so annoying to me how every single thing from, I don't know, getting busted for pot when you're 18 versus, you know, beating the crap out of a female when you're 21, they all get put under the same off the field bucket. So if you actually dig into what these guys have done that we know of, the Jermaine Burton, you know, slack and flack that's kind of getting thrown his way is mostly coming from Dane Brugler, who on the Athletic Football Podcast said the talent's there. It's a matter of consistency on and off the field. He's been to 6 schools in 8 years. So a lot of that is high school as well. As one NFL scout put it, he was on the shit list of the coaches of both Georgia and Alabama. Okay, you know, these unnamed scouts always sure seem to have a lot to say about this type of stuff. Yes, I do know after the very emotional Tennessee-Alabama game, Burton was seen, you know, smacking a female fan, whether it was a phone or whatever he did. Not good, okay? Yeah, I think we can all agree on that. But at the same time, don't exactly know all the details here. A.D. Mitchell's apparently a bad person because he's been having problems with his diabetes. Like, my God, you know, some of this just conjecture we have thrown around with these guys. Don't think it's the most fair thing in the world, but yeah. If you're going to bet on a late round prospect, I'm certainly with you on Jermaine Burton. Dwayne, I cannot stop drafting the dude late in underdog drafts, and that is just a fact. Don't plan on it. So I will ask Dwayne real quick, because, you know, throwing around a little bit of A.D. Mitchell shade.
Yeah.
Is the A.D. Mitchell problem just the fact that we think he's going to be a first round pick? Because, like, we have a dude who's just incredible athletic profile. I mean, to be 6'2", 205 with those jumps and running a 4.3 is, like, insane. The highlights are all there. I mean, my God, turn it on. I'm not saying maybe not quite as good as Keon Coleman, but we're pretty close in terms of just highlight factor. And like winning on the big boy routes downfield, like I feel like A.D. Mitchell is on everyone's shit list. He's going to be a bust because he's being viewed as a top 25 pick. But I feel like if he was more so seen as like the 50th overall pick, everyone would all of a sudden love him.
That's right. He should be a round 2 pick. Like if an NFL team was like coming to me and asking me, I would say I wouldn't draft him with a first round. But I mean, I have an analytical bend on these things, but I go read what the expert scouts are saying, like Waldman. So I mean, I'm factoring it, and like when I come out with just my true rookie rankings, and if you look at them, like I've still got Adonai Mitchell up there. I just don't think that he should be taken in the first round, you know, of an NFL draft. Like if you look at him, and here's the thing, the model, all the adjustments and the stuff that I added to it this season was all, honestly, you could honestly argue it was made perfectly for a guy like Adonai Mitchell, because what it does is if you're playing with a lot of other good players at a really big program, it discounts what it expects your RPTA should be, your receiving yards per team passing attempt. It will actually say, okay, your expected should be lower. Well, he still scored lower than his expectation based on his teammates. And then it looks at your quarterback. If you play with a bad quarterback or a good quarterback, that changes your expectations. Then it looks at your ADOT, and that factors into, okay, should you have been a big yak player? Should you not? Should you just been more of an air yards player? So even after you like factor all those things in, Like, he comes out as a guy that, to me, grades out as, yes, there are flashes. Yes, he has big moments. Yes, he does make big plays, but he's never been consistent with any of it. And I think you could say those same things about Jermaine Burton. And who knows, if Burton didn't have the off the field stuff, maybe somebody'd be talking about Jermaine Burton as a first round pick too, right? And we'd be having, and if we were, I would be saying the same thing about Burton. So kind of, I think where you're going with it is accurate, Ian. It's so, it depends on like the lens we're looking at the player through, right? And the biggest lens we have is expected draft capital right now. So when I look at Adonai Mitchell, yeah, I don't think he should be a round one pick. But if you told me he was going to be inside the top 15 picks in the second round, that totally changes things. I think that's at a spot where it's fine. Take a shot on him. So if you go at the very end of the first round, even then, I don't care. Like, you're kind of at that point, you know what you're looking for in the player, you know what position you're trying to address, and you're just taking a swing, right? And I get it. A lot of people are like, well, AD Mitchell, he's got all this upside. My only problem with that argument is how good are we really at grading upside? What's to say a dude that has a deep A dot that can attack you down the field is really has a ton of upside if he can't do the other things, especially in a league that wants to take away the deep shots? Mm-hmm. From that vantage point, I actually think Jermaine Burton offers you a little bit more, you know, I think versatility. If I just look raw watching these guys and like what the peak ceiling could be of a deep threat, I think, yeah, you argue that probably Mitchell's the guy that's going to give you the most. But I think it really comes down to like being able to be a complete receiver. I think a lot of people probably, you know, would have said, oh, well, Cooper Kupp doesn't have much upside whenever he was a rookie. Well, if he gets in a scheme where he can be on the field all the time and get out there and do his thing, look how much upside Cooper Kupp had, right? Because he could attack all areas of the field. He could beat man, could beat zone coverage. Just a lot of inconsistencies with AD Mitchell in those areas. So, like, he could eventually iron all that out and be an elite prospect. He's just not all the way there right now. And so, to your point, I think he's more of a round two guy, NFL perspective.
So many wide receivers could be flying off the board on day two. Going to be a fun little Friday afternoon, I believe, for everyone involved there. So good stuff, fellas. Let's get on to question number two. You know, a lot of these rappers are, you know, in the news lately, so I thought I would try to be hip with it. Guys, if Jay-Z comes knocking on your door and asks you for your best draft comp, so feasibly, if you say something really cool, like now you can start hanging out with Hove himself, what are you going with? Chris, we'll start with you.
I'm not going to go rappers, because I feel like that's not going to have like the easiest crossover for a lot of folks. I'm going to name like a rapper and Dwayne's going to be like, who are you talking about? Like right now, like, you know, 100%. But no, let's keep it in the entertainment field. Like, y'all like movies. Let's say I'll put Ricky Parasol is Barry Pepper. Like, Barry Pepper is that actor that every time you see him in a movie, you know, something's going to happen and you know, it's going to be good. Cause
that fucking guy, I had to look him up.
he's the guy that's just like, when he shows up, he's like, oh, that guy. Like, oh, and like he's been in what was it? Like back in the 90s, I love the movie he was in with Vin Diesel. It's got Knockaround Guys. Solid movie if you ever get a chance to watch that one. Saving Private Ryan, obviously, yep, is like one of the bigger ones that he was in like back in the day.
Green Mile.
Green Mile. Then what was it? He was in, I don't know, like, well, you probably haven't watched it, Ian, but look, my kids loved watching The Maze. It was like a book series that with a bunch of kids like running, like having to escape a maze. It's about like politics and like a world order, like whatever. But he was in like either the second or third movie for that one. But that's the type of guy that Parasol can be. Like, we know his ability to attack like the intermediate and also deep parts of the field, but his savviness as a route runner, ability to convert on in obvious passing situations, like first down per target rate, like fairly high. So it's like, when you know he's on the field, like something good is going to happen, most likely, just given how he performs like as a receiver and as a route runner. So if I wanted to relate it to Hove and be like, hey, like if you want somebody good, like you want some, like he doesn't have to be the A-list guy. Like, he's not going to be like your wide receiver one, not going to be your, he's not no Maserati Marv. He's not no Malik Nabers. Like, just, but if you want a guy on the field that's going to get the job done, Barry Pepper get the job done, and Ricky Parasol will get the job done for you and your squad.
It's also been around for 5 years. The man is already 24 years of age. Barry's been doing his thing for a bit. Dwayne, two thumbs up, one thumb up. How you feeling about that one?
I think the comp is great. And look, I like Parasol. I think he's overblown. I think he's just another guy that's overblown. Like, I'm kind of surprised he's being thought of as potentially a high second round pick, just given the fact he had so long to really get things going at Florida. he didn't have that much competition for targets. He had Kyle Pitts, you know, there for a minute, but it's just, I don't know. And he was at Arizona. Actually, he may not have even overlapped because he was Arizona State or Arizona. Was it Arizona or Arizona State? Anyway, Arizona I don't have it in front of me, but yeah. So I don't know. Like, I like him, but I think he's probably a slot wide receiver. I think he's probably limited in the scope of his abilities. I don't know how much I would really expect him to improve, you know, at this point, right? At the age that he is. But I will say, if he landed like with a guy like Sean McVay, would I be excited? Yeah, I would be excited because, like, if something happened to Cooper Kupp and we saw Ricky Parasol go into the lineup, like, I think there's a lot of possibilities. So I don't want to sound like I don't think he doesn't have any upside. I just think that it's more narrow. I don't see him immediately winning on the outside in two wide receiver sets in the NFL based on all the data I looked at. Was not typically what you want for that, is because you know you're going to get pressed immediately. You know you're going to see man coverage. They're going to test you right away. He wasn't great against man coverage. Like, he was just meh. And he was below average. So I want to be careful with him. So I don't think he's got a ton of room to grow into being an every down player, but in the right landing spot. And I think, Chris, even the first time I ever heard you mention him, I love the way you put it. You said, hey, lands on a pass first team that wants to run 11 personnel. I think something along those lines all the time.
Yep, that's it.
Parasol landed somewhere like that. Oh, dude. Yeah. I think there's a lot of potential because I think you get him in a lot of zone matchups against linebackers, against safeties. You know, he's got that savviness to know what the quarterback wants, what the quarterback's looking for, and he doesn't have to just win on pure strength and athleticism. I think that's where he wins.
Good stuff, Chris. I sadly do not have an entertainer comp to roll with, but going to quickly roll with one. I see the Drake May, Justin Herbert stuff. And if you look at just certain highlights, like, yeah, okay, I can see the mechanics and they're, you know, similar size, both have big arms and stuff like that. But their overall play style, and I think just the way they go about playing the position, is so different. So I'm going with Drake May being Justin Herbert if he shotgunned a 2 liter of Mountain Dew immediately before kickoff, because that's what we have here, guys. Like, Justin Herbert ran for 50 total yards during his final year at college, like during his final year at Oregon. Drake May, when you look at what he's actually done on the ground, man, his final year, he averaged 8.2 fantasy points per game from just rushing. That's more than what Justin Fields had during his last year at Ohio State, more than Deshaun Watson had at Clemson, more than Caleb Williams even had at USC. I really think that people that haven't been watching these guys all that closely, they're just, you know, looking at Drake May as more of the prototypical pocket type, probably because of his skin color, when in reality, when you watch this dude, like, he is kind of a wild child back there, man. Also, great song by the Black Keys, been jamming out to that lately. But just again, with Drake May, like, he does the lefty pass, by the way, if you guys have seen that. Horrible timing, ACC Network, to have your cameras go completely, you know, hellbent. This is, you literally see, like, the little thing at the bottom of the score board, you know, going up in the air. Like, it is a horrific timing for someone to complete a left-handed touchdown, but he's doing that. He's busting out random hurdle attempts. Like, Justin Herbert, we'll see him a couple times a year make just a tantalizing 60-yard bomb, usually to Jalen Guyton or one of those other random, you know, complimentary wide receivers, and we just want more of him. He's a guy that we'd almost take more interceptions from because of that special arm talent. Drake May, like, that's, again, some of that. It's not a great comp, but Josh Allen, like, when people say Josh Allen, that's what they're talking about with the way Drake May plays football. So again, the skill set is there. And I think, again, some of the looks are similar to Justin Herbert, but the way in which he goes out can be so entertaining. And I think a hell of a lot more fantasy friendly than most want to give him credit for. So again, I feel like it's almost been like Caleb and then Jaden Daniels. And then it's like, okay, now in fantasy, Drake May is the clear number three. And I think I've almost fallen into that groupthink a little more than maybe I should, because Dwayne, I know you, again, focusing more wide receiver, tight ends, RBs, you know, with the supermodels. We'll get the QB one in there 2025. Cannot wait. But I really, man, if he goes to the Patriots, that's where things get fucked up a bit for Drake May. But if we can get him with the Vikings, or, you know, just basically not with the Patriots, you know what I'm saying? I don't think his play style between him, I don't think Caleb Williams is especially any more fantasy friendly than Drake May when it comes to potential rushing production. And accordingly, when we do see the splits, like, Caleb right now is QB12 in underdog ADP. We have Jaden Daniels going like QB16 to 18. And then it's Drake May all the way down there, like QB23, 24. I definitely think they're in one tier together. And right now, that's not being reflected at all in their ADP.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. Like, reading Waldman's report on Drake May scared me to death. Like, I don't even know if I'll draft Drake May. He didn't even have him as great as a starter. He isn't great as a guy that's going to need, he's basically needs to go sit on the bench. And if he doesn't, like, he could break. Like, So look, it's one person's breakdown, but like quarterbacks are so hard to break down. And so like Matt's the guy I usually turn to. And maybe I'm biased because like he gave me Russ Wilson back in the day. He was the guy screaming at the mountaintop for Patrick Mahomes. So he's just got a good track record with quarterbacks that, you know, I've really, you know, dug into or been happy enough to draft. And also some that I've been lucky enough to avoid. And like he's not on him. I think from a standpoint of what you're talking about, you know, with that rushing upside, I agree. Like he's probably closer to Caleb Williams, like than, you know, far away. Like they're pretty similar. Not obviously in the Jaden Daniels tier. He's in his own tier as far as rushing. And we know that, you know, from a standpoint, if he gets on the field, he lands somewhere like Minnesota. If they trade up for him, we know they've got the weapons. And while Matt may not love him, we know that if he lands in that spot, he's getting his chance. Like they're going to put the guy out there and he's going to get a chance to shine. And so I think the upside case is if it does happen to click for him, I mean, he's got all the weapons around him, and now you get this rushing upside on top of that. And that could make him something that ends up being, to your point, a little bit closer to what we would get from, you know, potentially a Caleb Williams. I will say Matt doesn't see them as close. Like he sees Caleb Williams as being like the way his process grades out. It's like 85 and above is really good. It's hard to get over a 90, you know, in the way he scores the guys. And he's got, you know, Caleb Williams doesn't get to the 90, but he's over that 85. And then when you look at where Drake May is, it's really more like a guy that could end up, you know, as a backup. So I think there's just more boom bust with him. But like, if he were to hit, I could totally get on board with where you're coming from. You know, he's really interesting because I put up my Superflex rankings as well. They're all up over at Fantasy Life. You guys, I put out an article today with the top 20 running backs all written up in summary, with the top 20 prospects all written up in summary form. But if you want like my top 50 rankings for rookies, they're all on the site in a list form. And then you can also look at Superflex. And I, with Drake May, I was kind of trying to figure out, okay, where do I put him in a Superflex? Cause I had him outside of, I've got him as my number 23 player in non-Superflex. So I've got him pretty far down there. I've got him and JJ McCarthy pretty far down there. I've got Jaden Daniel. I've got Caleb Williams at 5. I think Caleb is basically, if you've got the way I look at, you know, dynasty in these rookie drafts, yeah, there's positional value, but if there are guys that we think truly are elite prospects, and I do think Caleb Williams is one of those, I think there's, you know, you've got Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, Romo Odunze, Brock Bowers, and Caleb Williams. So like, those are the guys I'm taking at the top of the drafts. Then you get into two tiers, though, honestly, of guys where you could poke holes in any one of them, or you could just sit there and sing their praises, right? And talk about all the reasons they're going to be successful. I think Drake May is somewhere in there, right? He could have the positives, right? But he's also got the negatives. So I also wouldn't argue with anybody. Like if they were like, I think Dwayne, you're way too low. You should have Drake May like 15. Because I've got Keon Coleman at 15 right now. It's not like I'm like standing on the at the top of the mountain screaming Keon Coleman's praises. I'm saying there are some things good in his game. There's some bad things in his game. I think you can say the same thing about Drake May.
Okay. So just to be clear, I do have Caleb above Drake, well above Drake, but man, harsh words from Mr. Waldman on, you know, who's still pretty much the consensus QB2 out there. I guess only time will tell what goes on with Drake May, but Dwayne, not for you. Jay-Z comp. What are you giving him?
Yeah, so if Jay-Z walked up to me today, and Jay-Z, like, you know, he doesn't know this, but he has used my rankings once before, once for fantasy football. I hope he won that year. I don't know. So it was one of those deals where Matthew reaches out to you. You know, he's like, hey, I'm doing this. Can you send me this? You know, I don't know Jay-Z. He would never text me, but he will text Matthew Berry. That's how cool Matthew is. So yeah, if I'm going with that, I will say it was going to be Will Shipley. But you stole it. And maybe I'll just use my Will Shipley one just because I thought it was really good. So like my comp would be like, if you're Milton from Office Space, and if you guys have seen him, he's got the huge goggles. He's the guy that always talks about the stapler. His glasses look like goggles. They're very thick bottle cap lens kind of glasses. But say you lose them, you're doing your film eval, Ian or Chris, you're staring at your spreadsheet. You know, Chris probably staring at more spreadsheet like me, Ian staring more at film. We all look at both, but you're like, you squint hard enough, you're like, hey, I see Roger Craig for Will Shipley. Ooh, so if you guys don't know who Roger Craig is, I'm also going back because Jay-Z, you know, like he's closer to my age. If you play Tecmo Bowl back in the day, you know who Roger Craig is. He was the best dual threat guy in the game. He was never a Christian McCaffrey level. He was never a Marshall Faulk level, but a tier below those guys. So he played for the 49ers with Bill Walsh. He was a second round pick. He was a little bit bigger than Will Shipley, but he was the kind of guy that was just real consistent and steady at everything. You could use him in every single facet of the game. Oh, great. You want to go try to take away Jerry Rice. Good luck doing that anyway. But let's say you want to double him and you want to try to take away Taylor on the other side. We're going to get this thing. We're going to get the ball to Roger Craig. He's not going to be the first read on a bunch of plays, but can easily be the second or the third read, can work down the field, can be a plus A dot guy. So yeah, I know we already talked about Will Shipley, but like those are the things like that I see whenever I look at Will Shipley. I don't see him probably ever becoming a Christian McCaffrey, but he could become like that one level below that, which could still give you a top four, top five kind of fantasy finish. If I were to try to stretch it and like just do, you know, another one like on the fly, but like if I went like in a negative version, I would say it's Xavier Leggett from South Carolina, who didn't break out till year five, didn't do anything before that. And guys, to be clear, I don't even use breakout thresholds anymore. Like I got rid of it because it's so gross trying to say, oh, if he got there or didn't, it's binary. It's not. Like everything is in a range, right? And so you still get a score and that gets weighted into the model. But the big thing with him, right, is he just didn't do anything until he got older. And so it just kind of reminds me of, if you guys remember the Kansas City Chiefs, their first round pick, Jonathan Baldwin from several years back. And he was a big dude, kind of had some flashed at the end of his career in college, but then he gets to the pros, right? And he never could just put it all together. That's my big fear with Xavier Leggett. So like I'm below consensus on him. He didn't even make my top 20 in my article today intentionally. I was like, he's got to be 21. Like, I just can't put him in there because I want people to be below consensus on him. Of course, now, you know, he'll go in the first round to like Buffalo. And you guys will just tell me that I've got to throw everything out the window whenever we come to grade our rookies in the post-draft analysis.
Chris, I don't want to speak for both of us, but I think Milton watching, you know, Will Shipley and concluding it's Roger Craig, I think that wins.
I think that one's the best one. Yeah. I think
good, it's the best one. Good for you, Dwayne. You got the dub. All right. Trivia, you two. Roger Craig is one of three running backs in NFL history with at least 1,000 rushing and receiving yards in the same season. Who are the other two?
Marshall Faulk. Yep. And did CMC get there?
CMC got there. God damn, Dwayne, you're making us look bad today. Kudos to
killing
you,
it.
My friend. And kudos to our friends over at DraftKings Sportsbook. NBA fans, with the playoffs kicking off, it is time to bring the hoops action to the palm of your hand with our partners at DraftKings Sportsbook. Right now, all new customers who bet just $5 on anything will get $200 in bonus bets instantly. So what are you waiting for? Download the DraftKings app now and sign up using our promo code QUESTIONS. The crown is yours, because that's right. Again, new customers can bet just $5 on anything and receive $200 in bonus bets instantly. DraftKings has got something for the returning customers as well. Score a no sweat NBA bet. And if sports betting is not yet available in your state, not to worry. You can still join in on all the fun with DraftKings Daily Fantasy and have a shot to win cash prizes. So please, everyone, download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Remember, new customers using our promo code QUESTIONS and betting just $5 on any wager will get $200 back in bonus bets instantly. That's promo code QUESTIONS only at DraftKings Sportsbook. All right, guys, Dwayne, one of my favorite parts about your super models in general is, you know, being able to look at the prospects, but also if you go to the little handy dandy year filter, you can actually select all and you can see how the prospects from this year's class actually stack up with everyone else that has obviously come out from 2018 through 2024. So at this point, Dwayne, what would last year's QB1, RB1, wide receiver 1, and tight end 1 fall for you in this class? As a refresher, everyone, we are going with Bryce Young, who was technically drafted ahead of CJ Stroud. Sorry, Panthers fans. Bijan Robinson, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, and Dalton Kincaid. What say you, Mr. McFarland?
Yeah, so at quarterback, we would have, Bryce Young would have come in number 2 for me. And I know that ends up being wrong, but you're saying like, hey, Bryce Young was the number 1 guy last year.
The prospect, Bryce Young.
Yeah, the prospect, yeah. So he would come in as number 2 this year. You would have Caleb Williams above him, but I think he still ends up edging out Jaden Daniels, who didn't do things until he was a little bit older. I think if you're just talking, you know, and there's also like NFL prospect versus fantasy, we're more of a fantasy Ben, but like you can make an argument that Jaden would still get in front of him just because of that elite rushing upside. But I would say 2 or 3. Is where Bryce Young, you know, would come in last year's class. And then if you look at the running backs from last year, Bijan's number 1 still. Jahmyr Gibbs is number 2. But Jonathan Brooks would have been number 3. And man, dude, when I did the work on Jonathan Brooks, so Tier One also released today, guys. You can go check it out over at Fantasy Life on the supermodel stuff. I also wrote him up in that rookie rankings article that I talked about earlier. But when you look at Jonathan Brooks, man, I was surprised at how well he graded out. I knew he was going to be the number one guy probably in the class, but man, with the way the model works and how well he did, whenever you start looking at the hit rates on guys that were around Jonathan Brooks, like I just wasn't expecting it. So, I mean, you guys can go check it out. And I did this for, you know, most of the prospects. I know he's got the ACL, so you kind of got to be careful. But when you look at the guys, like he's similar to Ian, 71% of the running backs in his range of the supermodel, 71% reached a top 24 finish in their first 2 years. Cool. Now, maybe you discount that some because ACL, maybe it's 3 years before he hits that. But still, that's a really freaking good hit rate, assuming he didn't do some sort of career-altering damage to his knee, which is still possible. But these days, like, we kind of lean into that. Okay, they've gotten so much better at ACLs. We're not anticipating that. And then 48% of the guys that graded in his range in the supermodel have a top 12 finish by year two. Now, the supermodel is the strongest model that we have from a standpoint of just looking at things without draft capital in it at all. It actually grades out higher than draft capital by itself from NFL teams. So when I look at him without the draft capital, it like gets even better. So, man, Jonathan Brooks would have been number three. Gibbs and Bijan would have still beaten him out. But honestly, I had to change the way I was thinking about him. I was thinking about Jonathan Brooks like being probably like around 13 or 14 in my overall ranks. I ended up putting him 8. And if he didn't have the ACL injury, so he's behind Brian Thomas, he's behind Jaden Daniels. But if he didn't have the knee injury, I think I would have had him 6 ahead of Jaden Daniels, just outside that tier of the elite guys that we talked about. And below that, because he hasn't done as for his career, but even after you put all that, you factor all that in, man, like he came out really, really great. So yeah. Then if we look at the wide receivers, you guys agree JSN was the top guy last year. Is that what we're going with here?
Yeah, he was consensus. Yeah. He was first one off the board.
So yeah, I know. Right. He was in, and the guys, we had 3 guys that were close in our model last year, but the model did make improvements. And so whenever you look at, you know, JSN last year versus what happened this season, you know, JSN came in at the 69th percentile of the model. So he would have been just ahead of Xavier Worthy, but behind Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers in a tier, Romo Dunze in his own tier. Then you would have Brian Thomas, Xavier Worthy, those guys in a tier together. He would have joined them. Okay. And then at tight end, it would have been Michael Mayer. I know that's who ended up not being. He graded out the best for me, but I think we'd probably say the industry-wide, you're saying Kincaid, right?
Yeah, he was tight end once.
For tight end, yeah. So from an industry standpoint, yeah, it was Dalton Kincaid last year. And if you look at where he came out in the model, now he was an older guy, so that did hurt him some, but he came out at the 60th percentile. If you put him in the model this year, he would have been number 2, but way behind Brock Bowers, who's at the 83rd percentile. Brock Bowers is like 2 tiers ahead of where we had Dalton Kincaid.
Good stuff all around. Not too different from what I was just, you know, probably would have said, you know, without even kind of going to the model.
Dude, why didn't you just tell me I didn't make the supermodel and just said, Dwayne, I can just thumb in the air this stuff and just tell you after all this. You know, you would have saved me 6 weeks of my life back. I wish you would have told me that 6 weeks
ago. Just completely throwing shit at the wall. This is my model, everyone. So yeah. I will say again, more fantasy perspective with the quarterback rankings. I think you can make an argument, Bryce, as, you know, more of the QB4. Again, having Jaden Daniels and even Drake May with some of that rushing stuff, but certainly would have been very close between Drake and Bryce Young. With Bijan, yeah, RB1 easily. And with the Jonathan Brooks note, I was, I've been, again, just grinding through Dane Brugger's The Beast, fantastic stuff. And when you start getting to these running backs, like you realize in a hurry, like how many of these dudes have had a brutal knee injury at one point or another. Again, it's unfortunate that Jonathan Brooks had to happen, you know, last November or December or whatever it was, but Blake Corum's 2022 season ended with a gnarly knee injury. We actually had Trey Benson tearing his ACL, MCL, and meniscus back in 2020. Marshawn Lloyd also has a torn ACL, you know, in his past as well. So, yeah, it sucks with Brooks, but just realize he's hardly the only, you know, damaged running back out there in this class. JSN, you know, yeah, I would maybe throw Xavier Worthy and A.D. Mitchell even ahead of him there. Just, you know, had kind of our concerns, but I'm also probably putting a little too much weight into what we saw in Seattle this season. Pure prospect JSN probably gets the nod. And then, yeah, Kincaid, as much as you know, I wanted to go in. I wanted to try to make a little bit of an argument with Kincaid that maybe we could look at him more so as a, you know, inline tight end that could pick up that job easier than Bowers maybe could. But honestly, the production is just so different. And with their size being as it is, I mean, I just think Bowers, again, gets that nod and fairly easily. So, Chris, anything you would be changing with these in your own personal model slash throwing shit at the wall?
No, I mean, because at least the way that I was approaching it was just going through and looking at some of the inputs that Dwayne puts into the model, but then just other general attributes that would be associated with each of the skill positions. So, like, for running backs, I was looking at just throwing all of their college production for all the guys. So whether it was Bijan from last year and then Jonathan, I keep saying like Jonathan, but I know I have to remind myself it's Jonathan because yeah, he tricky. Spells it that funky way. I mean, like no disrespect to the man or anything like that, but I see Jonathan, I'm just like, all right. But
does he really pronounce it that way?
I hope not. I hope it's
I'm just saying really Jonathan. Just, I mean, if I have to say Thon, I don't have to think of Thong, Jonathan.
Cisco. But like, I just say John, because if I don't, then when I write his name out, I'm going to spell it the wrong way. And then I'm going to yell that like on Twitter for not spelling it the right way. But for those types of guys, it was just take their college production like every year. And then let's look at the top 12, like see what guys not just stick out from just a 1 year basis. Because if you were to just take the ranks of, let's say, even just yards per route run for the running backs, like Bijan like jumps to the top for all of them. But I mean, Will Shipley like hops in there, Trey Benson's in there, but Bijan's actually in there twice. And the top, if you just take top 12 single season for all the guys, for both Bijan from last year and all the guys from this year, did the same thing for the wide receivers. Jackson Smith and Jigba obviously pops in there. Marvin Harrison, of course, like he pops in like 2-3 times across like most of those in order to come up with that. I think for me, like JSN probably fell into that same, like similar for to where Dwayne has him around like wide receiver 5-ish, like somewhere in there. And I think that makes some sense behind most of the like the top three for this class. And then in that Brian Thomas, like, you know, ish like type of range. So like 5-ish. And then the only thing that I saw for tight ends, whether it was yards after the catch per reception, which I think Brock Bowers absolutely dominates Kincaid like on a single season basis. I think he was averaging what, like 9 yards after the catch, like per reception. It was like 9, 8, 7, like each season. And Kincaid like was somewhere like somewhat behind him. But every other receiving metric that at least we typically like would want to reference, I think like Kincaid has him like fairly dominated. So I would at least have like Kincaid like as the tight end one. But I understand if we were looking at things from a like from a fantasy perspective, it would make some sense that if you want the guy that's going to create those explosives, and I think the consensus comp for Kincaid is like, or not Kincaid, for Bowers is maybe just like something akin to George Kittle, just because you see the explosive nature like after the catch. So if people think that and whatever, I can understand, but I think just the way that Kincaid was able to produce consistently and also dominate Bowers in so many other categories, I would have him as a tight end one, but it's not like a massive difference between anything else like y'all had.
Speaking of Bowers, we did have ESPN's Adam Schefter say recently that he does expect him to go off the board between pick 10 and pick 16. So right now, those teams are the Jets at 10, the Vikings at 11. But as we know, that could change to maybe the Cardinals or the Chargers if they do end up trading up and try and get J.J. McCarthy like many believe they will. Patriots, you know, certainly in the conversation as well. Then with the Broncos, the Raiders, the Saints, the Colts, and the Seahawks. Bengals down there at 18. Who knows? Because that would be another nice spot there. But Dwayne, like, this is a guy right now, he's fallen to tight end 9 in some of these early drafts, but I wouldn't be surprised if he is back there, you know, in the top 6 conversation. And yes, Sam Laporta fucking crushed last year. It was awesome. He was tight end 3. It is the best rookie season we've seen from a tight end in a decade. Is that enough for you, though, to be like, oh my gosh, all of a sudden rookie tight ends are back? Because yeah, it was the year of rookie tight ends. If you drafted Sam Laporta, Kincaid ended up giving us some nice numbers, particularly when Dawson Knox was finally out of the picture. He was more of a consistent tight end 1, but as a whole on the season, just tight end 14 in PPR points per game. Michael Mayer couldn't fully beat out Austin Hooper throughout the year. That passing game didn't do him many favors. Luke Musgrave, you know, wasn't quite hitting it, and then he got hurt, and Tucker Kraft starts taking over. Like, I felt like by week 8 last season, it was much more of like a, oh my gosh, rookie tight ends are here to party. And now looking back on it, I want to be careful about crowning Brock Bowers just more or less because of how good Sam Laporta was last year. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. But I think, you know, the landing spot just matters a lot for tight end, because we know that teams value things other than just their receiving ability. I don't think anybody questions wherever Brock Bowers lands, you could immediately use him as a weapon in the passing game. The problem is, does he land on a team that wants to run 21 personnel, which is a fullback and a tight end all the time, and they want, you know, someone that can block on run plays, all that kind of stuff? That could be a problem for him. If there's another good tight end on the roster. Now the Lions want to run the football and they didn't care, and they put Laporta out there. But the reason why is there was just such a big gap. There was no one else there. You had James Mitchell and you had Brock Wright. He really does block right, but it just wasn't enough to keep Sam Laporta off the field. So if Bowers lands somewhere where we feel like it's that kind of, you know, distance between him and someone else, but it's honestly pretty hard to get the kind of landing spot Laporta had last year. And, you know, Pat Pack, pat on the back, because like we said, Laporta was the guy, you know, even though Dalton Kincaid was going earlier and we signed off on that saying, hey, if you want exposure to Kincaid, you're going to have to take him before. But really the best target is Laporta, because they're both really good players. But where Laporta landed, like, we just see an easier path. And we even warned against the fact that most people laughed at us when we said Austin Hooper's not going to stand in the way, you know, of, you know, someone like, you know, Michael Mayer. But he's the perfect kind of example of just good enough veteran tight end. He's been around, he's had a season or two that were even decent himself. Like, Austin Hooper's had a good fantasy season back in the day. That kind of guy can really stand in your way. So when you start really breaking down the potential landing spots for Brock Bowers, you've got the Chargers, who we know they're going to want to run the ball. Like, if they trade down or they take Bowers where they are instead of a tackle, right? Mm-hmm. We know they just signed these two tight ends that they want to block. We've seen Greg Roman rotate his guys. We saw Greg Roman put Mark Andrews in jail for 2 years.
That's true.
As far as his route participation. So that could be tricky. If you look at the Jets, I think people will immediately want to say, oh man, like, he's just going to be out there all the time. And I would be good with the Jets as a landing spot. I think he's immediately the number two target on the team. But I could also sit there and look at it and be like, well, you know, I mean, at the same time, like, Tyler Conklin's been good when he's been given his opportunities, you know. Is Uzomah still on that roster? I mean, I still haven't finished my projections and stuff.
Nah, it's just it's Conklin and Jeremy Rucker.
Yeah. So that's probably okay. But the challenge is, if they like Conklin, well, what's he best at? Receiving role. Like, so, I mean, there are little things that could still get in his way. So like, all of that to say, look, the talent is elite. I would still bet on him in the top 12, but I think landing spot determines whether I'm going to be ranking him closer to number six, Ian, or closer to number 12.
One of those situations where right now in my fantasy life ranks, I do have guys like Dallas Goedert, David Njoku, and Jake Ferguson ahead of Brock Bowers, because I just think they have the sort of full-time roles and plus passing games that, you know, we're just hoping that Brock Bowers is going to land in. Who's probably going to have the better, you know, next 10 years? Yeah, I'll give the nod to Bowers. But again, guys, really tough for these rookie tight ends and honestly any other position. As fun as it is to talk about these guys for 3-4 months of the year, don't sleep on the, you know, incumbent veterans doing their thing. So good question there. And again, thank you to our sponsors at DraftKings for, you know, just being all around great people. Again, promo code questions to go ahead and get that awesome bonus bet. Yeah, bet on the NBA. It's fun, people. Making money is freaking fun, in my humble opinion. Guys, let's close things out with, yeah, whatever the hell we want. What is our favorite part of draft season? Chris, we have gone through prospect after prospect, position after position, and no actual new football has been played this entire time. Some might call that infuriating. Some might call it lovely. What say you? What's your favorite part of draft season, Chris?
My favorite part of draft season is probably all the way back to February, when it was the combine, like, where we actually saw players doing stuff, because everything else after that is just conjecture, right? It's rumors. It is, I mean, it, like, of course, and we're in the content creating business, so like, you have to be like team content to some degree, and so all that stuff is just based off of what people are hearing and who people are talking to, and some of it's probably just made up so that people can get a rise out of each other, and there's some strategy involved, and I get that. But my favorite time is when we see the players doing things, is when we get, I mean, because you guys know I'm an analytical person, so I want data, I want numbers, I want things I can point back to that give me something I can stand with 10 toes on and say, this is what actually happened. Like, I know that these guys ran these 40 times or did this, did so much at their pro day, or I have data that supports my takes. Like, I can do that type of thing. So that's my favorite part of the draft, because like, afterwards, it's just debates. That's all it is afterwards. It's people arguing about whether or not like this person, like their highlights are better than this other person. We'll get to those, the negative portions afterwards. But like my favorite part of draft is when we are having more, I would say, productive conversations about these rookies, about these prospects. And then that's where a lot of the construction of those narratives start to happen. But at least then we're all kind of learning together. Because a lot of folks aren't as deep into like the Devy guys that are looking at these prospects like for almost like years in advance. Even some of the draft guys who aren't getting into it until like the November, December timeframe. But it's really in February that I think after the Super Bowl is done, after we've all kind of taken a short hiatus and we all kind of try to get back into the swing of things, it's when we're all kind of learning together and understanding like who the top guys in the class are, but even some of the gems hidden, like the hidden gems, like in the class as well. I think that's the fun time where we are kind of collectively gaining knowledge and sharing that and being able to have some of those discussions where it's like, okay, I've got this guy at the top, got this guy at the bottom. Yeah, Caleb Williams is the number one, but like, hey, like Jaden Daniels is actually looking pretty good. Like Drake May is also looking pretty good as well. And then I think afterwards, once we get into this time of the year where we're getting so close to the draft season that we're just arguing about anything at this point, that's when it's just like, just give me the draft. I'm over it.
Arguing about things too, where like whether you're high on a guy or low on a guy, like, yeah, okay, remind me in 3 years and I guess we'll see how right or wrong we were about the whole thing. So I appreciate that about the combine as well, where, hey, it's one of the few instances we have in the offseason to actually bet on tangible outcomes, just like we do on the actual draft day. So I think that would be my favorite thing, just finally getting those names to actually be called out. Usually, you know, a pretty fun product just to go ahead and see, again, these dreams come true for all these guys just hoping to get in the NFL. And it gives you the chance to watch the American Classic draft day every single year like any, you know, good football fan should. So shout out Kevin Costner, best airplane movie ever. You can quote me on that one. So I gotta, you know, find the time this weekend to get Chris. We're playing cards on Saturday, man. We should just have draft
have
the day going.
Have to play on the background. Hell yeah.
On a loop. Let's see how many times we can get through it. Dwayne, favorite part of draft season?
I love all of it. But I love the part leading up to it because, you know, I just get the opportunity to really go back and dig in and find ways to hopefully, you know, you can't force anything, but you just get a chance. Like I get every year when I go through this process, like I have a list of questions that honestly I end up without time to get to. Right. So, I mean, as I'm working through it, I'm coming up with things, I'm checking them off the list. But then like by the time I'm writing, you know, these articles, putting the supermodel together, I still have a little bit of time to make tweaks, but ultimately we're to deadline. So when I get new ideas, where do they go? They all go in this Google Doc, and then I've got them for next year. And I get to, or things I think of during the season, you know, things that just come to you, you know, in the middle of the night, you wake up, you know, in a fever dream, Ian, and you write them down on a sheet of paper, and you wonder the next day, you're like, that doesn't even say anything. Sometimes it does. Things that keep you up. So I get a time to really dig into all those things. And a lot of times it is around the rookies, it's around the prospects, and I just get super excited about it. So when you get to do all that and put it all together, and then you actually improve the model, that's really fun. But like my favorite part, like thinking to the prospects, is whenever that analysis then leads you to players where the data is really telling you that we should be higher on them than the market, because that's really what we're trying to do. We're trying to find the thing. We're trying to find the inefficiencies in the market. And when you look at a model, it's never going to be perfect. And if you think about the way a model gets set up, what does it do? It's basically conforming to the things that have worked the most often. So there's always going to be outliers, things that the model misses, people that break the model, all that kind of stuff. And people look at that and they see that as a reason to like to throw a model out. Well, no, that like those things are going to happen. You have to know that they're inherent, and then we just learn from them in the future. But sometimes there's nothing to learn. Like sometimes people break the mold and they end up being great in fantasy. And you go back and you look at the other 100 times that archetype came through, and still it's only that one player that was able to, you know, really overcome all of that and become this great player. So when you do that, like what I love is then it puts these players into groups and puts them into tiers. And then you start thinking, oh, okay, great. So really the market values these 8 players very differently, but the model says they're all basically the same, right? Even though they might be a little bit, you know, apart. So I just love that. I love whenever you get to come to the guys like Will Shipley, the Jermaine Burtons. It's fun covering the top guys too and being able to validate that. Oh yeah, there's a reason that everybody thinks these guys are really good, because they are in fact just really freaking good. So that's fun as well. But I just love uncovering it, the hidden gems, if you will, and knowing that even though it's not perfect, like I'm following a process that I'm just purely 100% following the data. The data doesn't say that it matters. I don't use it, right? So that's why I don't mention a lot of other stats whenever I get into the model, because even though they're cool and they're fun to reference, like there's just a lot of stuff out there that doesn't matter. So I really enjoy figuring out the things that, you know, matter the most for these guys. And again, not to say the other things don't matter, but like if you had to pick the 5 to 6 things, that's what the model's all about.
It does crack me up, this standard of perfection that's kind of used in fantasy and even gambling, where it's just like, yeah, Dwayne, you know, your model isn't hit 100%. Guess what's also not hitting 100%? Anyone else's opinion on anything out there.
Like, how about, you know, NFL, who invests billions of dollars in getting right? these guys right?
Yeah.
Go look at the last, you know, 20 first round quarterbacks. Tell me how many were actually good. Like, yeah, I agree. Those NFL front offices knew more about who they were picking than we do. And that just goes to show you how crazy this beautiful game can be. So good stuff, gents. Let's get a little negative, though, before we get out of here. Why the hell not? Last question. What is your least favorite part of draft season? I'm going to start. It's the mock drafts. Okay. I think as a whole, they can be fine. What pisses me off is how we have these 5 to 10 versions of mock drafts that are rapidly changing, despite there not being a single new snap of football being played. So people are presumably only changing their mock drafts because of other mock drafts. And it's just one continuous circle jerk of people going around. No one actually has any insider information on Jaden Daniels going to Washington at number 2, but because Ben Standig, who is great at what he does over at The Athletic, awesome community beat reporter, basically one guy went out and said, yeah, you know, I think this will make sense. And now every single person is just following it. I really respect the people that go out there and do the mock drafts. Like, this is what I would do as an NFL GM. But like, we're not even trying to evaluate these players at a certain point. It's just like trying to read tea leaves between unnamed sources and then regurgitating new shit that's going on through another mock draft. Like, sadly, I know there's this big mock draft competition. Everyone wants to win every single year. And good for you guys. You know, go ahead, try to win it and everything. But like, me or Chris, not doing mock drafts. What's stopping us from taking Daniel Jeremiah's on April 24, changing 2 picks and saying, oh yeah, this is my own, you know? Because that's what everyone else is pretty much doing. There's a couple top thought leaders in the mock draft world, and we're just all using them. Yeah. And by we, I mean, I'm not the one doing it. But again, It's not even a study on football at a certain point. It's a study on other mock drafts. And I just think the circular groupthink that goes on with it is infuriating. When I read the mock drafts, again, it's not like, oh, this guy would really fit in here. It's just like, oh, no, this is what, you know, everyone else is saying will happen. So it bugs me, guys. It bugs me. Yeah, that's all I got. Chris, what don't you enjoy about the draft season?
The last minute, so next week, I'm assuming it's going to happen at some point. And we've already started to see it now. The one comparisons to already established like NFL players, even though we'll always like, it'll be couched as, well, this guy coming out like as a prospect, like the thing that annoyed me last week, and I don't even want to get into the debate as to whether or not it's legitimate or not, but Jaden Daniels is a better prospect than Lamar Jackson as a prospect. And it's like, well, what? Why do we need to make that comparison? Because they're black, like, or whatever. Like, why are we doing this? Like, I don't see like what's the value behind that? Like, I don't understand. But it's that stuff, and then also we're going to probably get some of it next week, and especially on draft night. The general, like the character concerns, that's when those reports will start to come out. And then probably even like draft night, I don't know if we'll get like the Laramie Tunsil level of just chaos that might happen on draft day, but just like those types of reports that will leak out as for a reason that a player is not going to get selected. I hate that shit. It's like, if you had those concerns were things that should have been brought up like 2 months ago. Like, we were just talking earlier about the Jermaine Burton stuff. Like, those are things that, like, the incidents or concerns that have been like red flags, whatever, that have been brought up time in memoriam for all these guys. But then now, of course, on next Thursday, you're probably going to hear, Will Shipley, like, the, you know, coaches were saying like his interviews were terrible. He was just a bad, you know, bad communicator, doesn't really know what he was talking about. You know, that's probably, he's not going to make it until probably like round 4, round 5 or something like that. You're going to hear it, like something along those lines. And that's the part that I really abhor, because to your point, Ian, like these are the days where, like, those are the days where the prospects are living their dream, what they've been studying and working for decade. For most of them, most of their lives, like, these guys have been doing it. And to have something like that be discussed in such a, I don't know, like an offhanded way where it's like you're not even providing enough context to really say like this is something heinous or not. It's just like off-field concerns or whatever. That's just the part that I just mute my TV the moment I start hearing that type of stuff. It's like, just give me the pick. Like, just, I'm just waiting until the pick is in and then let's move on to the next guy, because trying to discuss a player's life or their, or whatever happened to them in like the few minutes that analysts have to talk about it, miss me with all that stuff. And let's just get the pick in.
And most of the time, Chris, like, there's not even an actual well-respected figure saying like, this is what I think about someone's character or problem. It's, oh no, this unnamed scout or source who isn't brave enough to actually go out there with their opinion, leading to the BS coming out. So Dwayne, anything that especially grinds your gears around this time of the year?
Actually, it's gotten better, but the thing that used to really grind my gears is when everyone would try to pit like the more data oriented people against the film.
Yeah.
Like, because if you talk to most really good data people, like, I don't really know any that don't believe there's value in film. Most of them do. I think the question is like, and even I get this way with people, like I had someone hit me up on Twitter this week and they're like, hey, you know, you're too data and not enough film. I'm like, actually, I'm really pro film, but I just don't overrate my ability to watch film. I haven't spent thousands and thousands of hours studying film. Like, to become an expert at it, one, you've got to know what you're looking at. That takes a ton of practice getting good at, right?
Yeah.
The other thing you got to know how to do is you've got to know, okay, great, now that I know how to watch it, which of these things actually matter? Because that's what happens, right? You end up, and that's what drives me crazy with a lot of the scouting reports when I start to read them. And not to like get overly, you know, just gush on Matt Waldman, but he's a good example because he gives you all this criteria of what's weighted, how it's weighted. And so I can actually test that stuff, right? If I want, I can go look at it and I can see that he values being able to separate more than this other thing. Whereas a lot of times I'll read other scouting reports and it's all jammed together, you know, or I have somebody hitting me up on Twitter that, you know, hey, you know, you can't just learn in spreadsheets. Yeah, we all agree on that, but that's been way better. So I'm going to give like a hat tip to the whole community. It does seem like people have kind of gotten off of that, of just like trying to pit people against. I remember back in the day, it could get pretty gross. Like, you know, you get somebody comes in behind you, you know, and answers, you know, says something behind your tweet and they at like some film person, you know, like you're supposed to come in and like slam dunk on you. And you're just like, okay. Like, so I think there's a ton of value in film. I think that, you know, a lot of people are good at it, but I think there's also probably a lot of people that think they're good at film and really they're not. They don't even know what they're looking at. They don't know if it's important. They don't know if it's not important. And that's not a knock. Like, if you love watching film, just watch it and make it. We're all supposed to be having fun with what we're doing. I still watch all the players. I just don't let it heavily weight, you know, against, you know, how I'm grading. Instead, I go look at what the people that I know that are doing this, that have decent track records. Like, I try to look at what they say. And then I watch the film after reading what they have to after what they have to say and looking at the data and all that. So I'd say that's the biggest thing, but it's really gotten better. I would say the only other thing, and it's not really something that I don't like, it's still fun. It's kind of like opening Christmas presents, you know. Some things are good and sometimes you're like, oh, thanks, you got me some socks, awesome. You know, some of the landing spots, that's what you get. You're like, oh, a pair of socks. Yeah. I like, if Jonathan Brooks lands on a team, you know, say if he lands behind Jonathan Taylor, who just signed, you know, an extension, still a pretty young player, like, that's gonna, I don't like that. I want Jonathan Brooks to land on a team where, fine, you sit behind somebody this year, but next year we get a chance to watch you, you know? So obviously, like, we want him to land somewhere like the Cowboys is perfect because they don't have anything. By the end of this year, he could be on the field. We have no control over that, but sometimes, you know, that can be a bummer where guys land. Like, I remember last year with JSN, we weren't crazy about it. Like, we probably should have moved him further down our draft boards, like looking back at it. But when you land with DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, that's a challenge. We even called it out. I think you looked at it and I looked at it, Ian, going back and looking at guys that had to compete with coming into two players that had similar target share histories as what DK and what Tyler Lockett had.
Yeah.
There weren't a lot of rookies that there were not any rookies going back to 2011 that boomed in that scenario. You were basically hoping he could be a wide receiver three. So, I mean, that's another example of like a receiver we love landing somewhere where, you know, it was just, it's tough to break out in that environment.
Zach Charbonnet going round two and immediately ruining both his outlook and the Kenneth Walker hype.
See, and those are the double whammies.
Yeah, dude. too. Yeah. So taking away someone we already love and someone we wanted to love. So hate to see it, but we do love to see the NFL draft again being right around the corner. We're going to have some live coverage from the whole Fantasy Life crew. Make sure you guys check that out. FantasyLife.com newsletter, like and subscribe, all that business. So appreciate you guys tuning in. For Dwayne, for Chris, for producer James, I'm Ian. Thanks again for tuning in to Fantasy Life Podcast. And until next time, take care, everybody.